Hey, this is James Devine, and this episode is going to be a little bit different. You see, I really think you teachers, you music teachers, make a difference in students' lives, and you may not realize just how big of a difference you make. And in this episode, I share my story with an audience, talking about the effect that music has had on me, and I use my 100-year-old saxophone to describe it. Listen through all the way to the end to find out how you can get a free gift.
Strike up the band so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine. The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
It was September of 1979, the first day of seventh grade for me. The first day of band. I was so excited about band. Now, I had been playing clarinet for a year, but this was my first time holding a saxophone in my hand. And the saxophone was much shinier. Saxophone had a much cooler sound. And before I even knew what that meant, the saxophone was a much sexier instrument than clarinet. The saxophone plays an important part in my story because playing the saxophone and getting first chair in the band and having a lot of success through middle school really helped me. It was the first time that I had self-esteem and that my self-esteem was built up because I had a lot of experiences that just brought that self-esteem down. But for a moment, let's go back. Way back to 1920s. No, that's not when I was born. But that's when this saxophone was born, sometime in the 1920s. It's a vintage Kahn tenor saxophone. You can see that the lacquer is scratched off and has lots of imperfections in it. And it has brown and green where it's starting to rot and turn nasty and corrode a little bit. When I bought it, I thought I was going to have a cool saxophone and I was going to paint it gray. Well, if you look at the caps of spray cans, it never comes out quite on the surface like you had hoped it would be. So I sprayed about half of it gray and I decided, no, that's just not going to work. I can't do that. So I got a can of gold spray paint and I started to cover up the gray and that just made it even worse. My daughter, when she was about six, she knocked it off its stand one time and there's a couple of little dents down here that remind me of that time when my kids were little. It's ugly. It's an ugly saxophone, but it has a story to tell, and it reminds me of the story of my life. And one of the things that it reminds me of is the old Joe Cocker song, "You Are So Beautiful to Me." Jump forward now to the spring of 1972. And in the spring of 1972, I was 5 years old. I was in kindergarten, and I loved my kindergarten teachers. God bless kindergarten teachers. They are awesome. I had a friend who lived next door. His name was Monty, and Monty was Filipino. His mom was Filipino, and she could cook some really delicious food. And my sister, Mimi, that's not her real name. Her real name is Lillian. Lillian, she got her name Mimi, because when I was little, everybody called me Jimmy. And I thought that all little children everywhere were named Jimmy. So when I tried to say Jimmy, it didn't come out as Jimmy. It came out as Mimi. And so the nickname stuck for her. And we had a dog named Snoopy. Snoopy was a beagle, just like the Snoopy in the Peanuts cartoon. And Monty and Mimi and I, we loved Snoopy. And we would play with Snoopy. We would take a break to go eat Filipino food with Monty's mom. And my mom was Italian. And Italians know how to cook. Rita Farina was her maiden name. And when Italians make meatballs, they have a secret ingredient that they put in it. Of course, there's the meat. There's salt, pepper, Parmesan cheese, breadcrumbs. If you want the recipe, I'll give it to you later. And then a couple of eggs that you put in there. But here's the secret ingredient. You have to kind of take it and mix it up with your hands and squeeze it till all the spices kind of get married and they mingle together. And that's what adds the flavor. And then you roll them up into just the right size balls and drop them into the hot oil, the hot olive oil. And then they end up being crispy on the outside and chewy on the inside. And they're delicious. But without that secret ingredient, then they're not going to be that great. One day, my dad takes me and Snoopy and puts us in the car. And we start driving. We drive past the grocery store where I could sing for the local proprietor. And he would give us a piece of chocolate if we sang for him. And we passed the houses and the school I was a part of. And we just kept going. And we passed more houses and more businesses. And finally, they were becoming less and less sparse. And the woods were becoming deeper and deeper. And to me, it seemed like as a five-year-old, it seemed like we were going really, really far. It's like, where are we going? My dad pulls over to the side of the road in this heavily wooded area and opens the door. Snoopy jumps out. Snoopy's so excited to there's new woods to explore, new grass to smell, new grass to roll around in. And Snoopy is so excited. Then my dad shuts the door. And he pulls away. So that was hard for me. I was wondering, what's going to happen to Snoopy when it gets dark out tonight? What's he going to eat? Am I going to be dropped off on the side of the road someday like Snoopy was? I didn't have a good relationship with my dad. Most children would just say, Dad, what's up? What are you doing? Why are we doing this? I didn't feel like I was afraid of my dad. My dad was someone who beat my mom at a time when the world just kind of looked the other way at that sort of thing. My mom had called the police, and the police would come in and investigate, and then the police would say, I'm sorry, it's a domestic matter. There's nothing that we can do. She went to her priest, and the priest slammed the door in her face, and he said, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. They were letting fear guide them. In May of 1972, I was in my last month of kindergarten, and my father said, get these blankety-blank kids out of here, and you take your blankety-blank self back to Naples, Italy, and I don't want to ever see you guys again. So we packed up our suitcases. We each had, my sister Mimi and I had our one little suitcase. My mom had one suitcase, and we went with all of our earthly belongings to Naples, Italy. Life was good again. I had like 9 aunts and uncles, and I don't even know how many cousins I have. The habit in Italy is you name your first daughter after the grandmother. So I have like 6 cousins named Angela because they're all named after their grandmother, who I never got to meet her. But life was good. It was full of meatballs, full of playing with Italian friends. You can't beat the meatballs, right? You could eat those every day. Full of Italian friends, and I got to learn to speak Italian. I was poor, but I didn't know it. There was always food around, love around. My uncle Salvatore, I credit him with this 30 years that I've been in the music business. He always had his guitar, and he'd be playing his guitar and singing at family gatherings. And in Italy, the louder and more boisterous you are with singing, the more encouragement that you receive. And so it really helps to bring you out of your shell. So life was good. We had some American friends, too. There's a Navy base there in Naples, Italy. And we had these friends, George and Jean. And George and Jean had 3 children of their own. And those 3 children, and Mimi and I, would often play together in the small apartments that we had there in Italy. And my mom, Rita, and Jean would go off shopping and go off and do their thing often. And George would watch all 5 of us kids. One night we were all playing, and as kids are prone to do, a fight broke out amongst us. And we were yelling at each other, and I don't even know what the fight was about. But George said that he wanted to talk to me about what had happened. And tears were just streaming down my face. I hated getting in trouble. I still do, even now. If the principal calls me into the office, I'm like, oh no, what did I do? Tears were streaming down my face. And George embraced me and he said, don't worry. I know you didn't do anything. I just need to talk to you. And George brought me into the bathroom and he embraced me. And I love George. He was the first father figure that I had in my life. And he was wiping the tears off of my eyes and calming me down and saying, don't worry, you're not in trouble. And then George proceeded to do something that no one should ever do to any boy or girl anywhere. You can't even describe the way your heart feels It just felt like my heart was shredded in two and torn apart to have this man that I loved to have him do this to me. It's so confusing as a 5-year-old and 6-year-old to have that happen, because you don't understand everything that's happening to you. The abuse continued for a couple of years. We moved to Norfolk, Virginia, because my mom knew a lot of people in that area because of the Navy. And George and Jean moved to Norfolk, Virginia also, and the abuse continued until finally, about at the age of 9 or so, George moved away. And you would think, okay, the abuse has stopped. The pain is over with. But that type of abuse, the emotional pain of it, is like a seed that's planted, and it just keeps growing and growing. And when I became a teenager and I started to understand what happened to me, I really started to hate George. And I had this saxophone, and it was the only thing that was like giving me some self-esteem. Everything else, people were calling me names and calling me faggot and homo and all kinds of names and mama's boy. And the only thing that I was good at was the saxophone. But I started to hate this guy. And by the age of 16, I hated him enough that I wanted to see him dead. I wish I could kill him. And I was so glad that he didn't live anywhere near me anymore, because I don't know if I would have acted on that. But I made a decision. At the age of 16, I decided that I could not let this continue to hurt me, because it wasn't hurting George anymore. He was gone. He was out of the picture. But it was hurting me. It was holding me back as a person from being the person that I was meant to be. And so I finally said, I forgive George for what he did to me. And I told my mom what happened, and that was the beginning of my healing journey. I wish I could say that immediately everything was better in my life, but that was the first step in a 1,000-mile journey of healing, and I haven't completed that journey yet. I'm glad to say that I feel like I'm 96% healed from that, but that at age 16, that was the first step in that journey. And it took me until 2 years ago to be able to finally be able to look in the mirror and be able to say the words to this song that's more popular now. And that the words are, when I see your face, there's not a thing that I would change, because you're amazing just the way you are. As Paul Harvey used to say, now for the rest of this story. So all throughout high school, the saxophone was my self-esteem, and I was first chair all throughout junior high and high school. And when up in my junior year, I knew that was what I wanted to do with my life. And I feel so fortunate now to have had 29 years in a career that I love, playing music and teaching music. And I feel so blessed with that. I married my high school sweetheart. We're going on 29 years of marriage, and we've been blessed with four beautiful children and two beautiful granddaughters who just mean the world to us. My sister Mimi, I'm the only one, and my mom are the only ones who call her Mimi now, and my nephews and nieces are the only one that call me Uncle Jimmy. But she has a family of her own, three beautiful children, and she's doing well. And that mother who made Italian meatballs, Rita Farina, she lives about 3 blocks from us, and she's still making her meatballs. I am so fortunate to have that. And you know, this is something that coaches want people everywhere to be able to say. I can look now, after 32 years of this 1,000-mile journey, 32 years of this healing and forgiveness journey, I can now look at George in the face, if he were here now, and say to him, thank you for the pain. It helps me with my game. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to my story. I hope that it was a blessing to you. If you would like to see the video of that performance, you can see that on my website, jamesdevine.net. Also, I'd like to offer you a free gift, the book that shares a little bit more of my story. It's called Forgive one man's story of being molested. To get that for free, all you need to do is go to jamesdevine.net and click on the store, add that into your cart, and then enter the coupon teacher or the code teacher, and that will give you $12 off, which will give you the book for free and a music download if you like, also for free. And really, you can use the coupon for anything in my store. So if you decide that there's some other book that you would like, the books are all, I think, $10 each. So the $12 coupon will help you with that. This coupon does expire March 31st of 2020. So please use this pretty quickly if you would like to do that. Thank you for pouring into students every day and blessing their lives.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band.